All right, this week we are joined by a special guest, Mark Kerman, Bloomberg News, our old colleague at 9to5 Mac. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Doing well. How are you guys? Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming. And hey, Mayo, how's it going?
I'm all right. How are you guys?
Great, great. Mark, let's discuss some of your recent stories over the last couple of years. So this week there was the Apple event for March 25th, officially announced with the tagline, "It's Showtime." So it's going to be about the video stuff. But just today you had a new report with new details about the video service and what's to expect at the event and beyond this year. So what's the latest that you're hearing about what's coming at the event and what to expect about the video service?
Right. So as you guys have been reporting as well, the event primarily is going to be about the video service, Apple Video, as well as Apple News Magazines, which is basically this app Texture that, you know, they bought a year ago, rebranding it, integrating it as a tab into Apple News. I believe you guys had screenshots of that from Rambo a few weeks ago, of course. And then the, you know, Apple Video, two primary new things will be the original content stuff, basically all the shows and movies they've been developing, plus this subscription bundle of things like Stars and Showtime and HBO. You'll be able to pay for that. And those are going to be the main new things, at least at launch, because much of the original video content isn't yet available. It's really going to be interesting to me to see if they charge for the original video content from the get-go, given there's not going to be that much to actually view yet.
So do you think that they're going to have any, from your reporting, original shows like this summer or this spring, or will it all be this fall? And they only have this sort of Amazon Channels clone that you reported, I think, last year at first.
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be a very small amount of shows, perhaps in the fall. But I'm not anticipating like a whole catalog or so until next year, even. Right?
Yeah.
It's going to be very slim pickings.
And your reporting today is that they're still working on last-minute deals, even for not the original content, but just for letting you subscribe to other channels within the TV app, right?
Right. So the idea is to be able to get all the licensing deals done by this Friday, and they're offering some concessions in order to get those done with the likes of HBO, Stars, and Showtime. And, you know, this is really not dissimilar to all the reports we've gotten in the past about, you know, last-minute race to secure the ebooks deals before the iBooks launched with the iPad in 2010. This was likewise for iTunes Radio in 2013 with iOS 7. Also, last-minute things coming together for Apple Music in 2015 and the revamp in 2016. You know, it's par for the course where if you're trying to strike media deals, these things go down to the wire. And that's what we're seeing again with the video service.
And you can kind of use the events announced. We're serious about this. We've got a deadline. It's like part of negotiating that you're serious about it. And you can't just keep negotiating forever, I guess.
And you kind of get everyone like, oh, have you signed yet? Oh, no. And then as soon as, you know, say HBO signs, then, you know, Stars and everyone follows along with the same kind of agreement, essentially, because, you know, the domino effect just rolls through and then you fill out the platform that way.
Yeah. And the early reporting on this, you know, BuzzFeed had the date and place, and that it would be at least about the new service and then some kind of setting expectations, not AirPods, not iPad mini. And from what it sounds like, we're really just expecting, you know, the news and the magazine stuff, the Apple and the video stuff. So they must be confident that they've got something ready to show, I guess. Like, and also that this will be a big deal because I don't recall like a non-developer conference WWDC type event where it's a whole event just about services, but not about any hardware that you can buy. So Mark, what do you think about that, Mark? Like, they must be confident that this is, you know, I guess event worthy for one, and also like just newsworthy that it's going to be a hit.
I think this is them sort of putting their money where their mouth is. They've spent upwards of $2-3 billion on the original video so far. So in order to do it justice, they really need to show that they're serious about it. In terms of perspectives from partners too, they can sell it to them as, hey, we're giving this as much attention as we would give a new iPhone or iPad, for example, or an Apple Watch. So they want to give it that shout out. They've also been sort of pointing people, I mean, for those who care about the investment side of things, to services being its next big thing. So they really need to sort of prove that and showcase that by coming out with a slew of new services at once. And it's sort of been, I think, a little bit ironic or disingenuous in the last year or so. They've continuously pointed towards services. But the irony there is they haven't done any new services in 3-4 years. Apple Pay was in 2014. Apple Music was in 2015. So they've sort of been, I don't know, from a consumer's perspective, a public-facing perspective, sitting on their hands in terms of their own Apple services. Yeah. Now they have, you know, 2 or 3 ready to go this year all at once. 3 or 4 years later, yeah. They need to do it.
It's kind of convenient too, because they had this lofty goal a few years ago of doubling their services like over 5 years or so. And they had growth from, you know, just naturally the App Store. And they talk a lot about like the ad revenue from App Store search, but that just can't be that big. And so all of a sudden now we've got actually like Apple Music sized, potentially new services, new ways to pay Apple monthly that are coming. And that certainly won't hurt. You also had reporting.
The whole investor pressure thing definitely leads into why. You know, this is a March event ultimately, even if the original content, you know, portfolio isn't probably launching till, you know, later in the year. They want to announce this early, maybe sign on more, you know, partners to keep this running through, even if they only have, you know, the Amazon channels like clone ready to go this month or whatever. They want to be shown to like be doing stuff. Like they can't just be repeating the empty words over and over again.
Yeah, I mean,
your original content isn't ready to go out the door yet until, you know, September or whatever.
You had in the last earnings call Tim Cook telling investors that we'd be entering new subscription services or new services this year, but he wouldn't say more than that, even though we all know what it is, and they'll finally be able to talk openly about it, I guess. Mark, you also had reporting that kind of payment industry people are being invited to the event. Is that right?
Yeah, so some just like. When the Apple Watch was announced, they invited a bunch of people who covered the fashion industry or watch industry to that launch event in September 2014. Now we're hearing that there's people who cover the payments and credit card and sort of rewards landscape of things are going to be there as well. And you put two and two together, it seems indicative, you know, we're not 100% certain about it, but indicative that they're going to, you know, at least discuss the framework of this Goldman partnership. But what we do know for certain is iOS 12.2, which Apple News Magazines is tied to, includes the revamped Apple Pay app, which sets the foundation for this partnership with Goldman.
Yeah, so that would make sense. And then without Bloomberg's reporting, without your reporting, we wouldn't know for sure if this is going to be the video stuff or not until, you know, maybe the clues pointed that way with the event invitation. But you were first to report that Hollywood stars will be in attendance at this event. So we might expect
That's too kind. That's too kind.
So we might expect to see, at least in the audience. What do you think about trailers? Like, do you think they've got anything ready to show on stage, or if it's just, you know, this is what we've been doing?
I think it's going to be trailers.
Yeah.
I think trailers is what the main entree will be. Obviously, they'll talk through the technical details and the product details, but I think you'll see some trailers for sure.
And this is the first Apple event at Steve Jobs Theater, Apple Park, that's not in September for an iPhone. Since they've opened the theater, they've done spring and summer events, but, you know, for WWDC or for the iPad events in Chicago or the iPad event in New York. So it's interesting because, like, if you look at what people excited about the event want, you know, they want AirPower and AirPods 2, and it just seems like it's not that, but that they're using this venue because of, you know, who's invited to it, the Hollywood stars, and it's in California. So it's a chance to show off their, you know, the best they have, I guess.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, with what we get with hardware, probably outside of the event, whether it's before or in the days or weeks afterwards. But let's fast forward to WWDC, because you've already got great reporting on what to expect for WWDC, including iOS 13 dark mode, iOS home screen redesign plans, and the continued roadmap for Project Marzipan, which, again, credit to you. Everyone in the community says Marzipan to mean iOS apps running on the Mac. And we just say Marzipan is like shorthand. And that's only because of your reporting is like what it was called internally. And Apple's given it no name. So you followed up that reporting with what the future roadmap is for that. So tell us a bit about what to expect at WWDC 2013 or 2019.
It's funny because I saw like a few reports from some people saying that Marzipan was made up, and it's not true, but now it's sort of commonplace. But anyways, they're going to sort of release, or not sort of, they're going to announce the SDK. The way it works is it's not going to be one app that runs on both an iPad and a Mac. So you'll be able to write an iPad app, for instance. You upload it to the App Store. That's great. But there will be an option in Xcode to recompile it as a Mac app. And then you would upload that to the Mac App Store separately. So just right now, like developers can, you know, they sell an app on the App Store, they upload it to the iOS App Store. Great. Then separately, they have their Mac developer program and they upload it to the Mac App Store. What they'll be able to do now is basically that same thing, but you're basically duplicating an iPad app into a Mac app and then uploading it to the Mac App Store. The year following, they'll do the same for iPhone apps to be able to convert an iPhone app to run on a Mac app. And then by the year after that, it'll be a single binary.
Yeah.
So the idea is you can share code, but they're not identical binaries because there will be still be some differences, you know, scattered about the place. So you have to recompile and upload, and it's reducing developer effort, but it's not exactly the same binary running everywhere for initially.
Exactly.
And the idea of iOS 13 dark mode, we got dark mode on the Mac last year and as a new appearance option. So kind of expect the same thing, but for iOS coming this year?
Yeah, of course. I mean, they did it on the Mac, clearly they wanted it on the iPhone.
Yeah.
So they'll finally have it this year. It makes sense with the OLED screens and such. This is now going to be their third year of iPhones with OLED screens. About time they should have dark mode. You see all these developers pushing toward it as well.
Yeah. And in your reporting about the iOS home screen redesign, we got the sense from that it could be iPad only or iPad primarily, at least. And so,
iPad primarily.
Yeah. Don't expect so much on the iPhone, but the iPad. And that makes sense too, because like on the iPhone, the home screen is kind of what it is. But on the iPad, especially the bigger models, it's just kind of ridiculous when you've got, you know, tremendous gaps between app icons and you can't even make it denser as like how many you have on the home screen. So.
Yeah, you don't feel as limited, right? Like when the iPhone has survived pretty well, even as the screen's got slightly bigger for the home screen to fill, you know, a grid of icons is all right. Whereas on the iPad, the spacing is ridiculous. And we've seen like regressions, like the widgets column used to be a two column interface and in iOS 10 and then for 11 and 12, it's a one column interface. It's like, you know, there's
it's gone backwards.
That they've even done before that they could bring back out again. And as, you know, a new feature, even if it's stuff they've actually already done before, but they just got rid of for no good reason.
Hmm. Yeah, and for WWDC, we should be a few days away probably from the keynote being announced and registration opening. I know it was this time last year whenever that was announced, so we should be close, if not, you know, by the time this goes out already.
That's interesting. Last year, did they wait until after the Chicago event to announce the WWDC dates, or did they do it beforehand?
It was before. The WWDC was the 13th, and then they announced the Chicago event on the 18th.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they're going to do that later this week or next week, or if they're going to wait until like right after the March event.
Yeah. And this is the third year of San Jose. So there's less need to be earlier and, you know, an earlier. I think like the first year it was like February when they announced it because it was a big change. And then last year it was March, but before it used to be like maybe
April latest. Normally.
Yeah. April is May, maybe. So everyone, plus there's already been the leak of probably when the dates are based on like hotel by the convention center schedule. So
are you guys going to go to WWDC?
Like last year, if there's keynote access, it's worth the trip. And if not, then it's probably not.
Yeah.
What about you, May? I mean, you're actually a developer and I don't think you've been before.
Yeah, I've never actually been, but it's a trek from the UK, you know.
They've made a lot of progress over the years with like making videos from actual sessions beyond the keynote available same day, you know, and that used to not be the case for a long, long time. So, and finally, Mark, I want to talk about something that you reported almost 2 years ago that's back in the news this week, because supply chain analyst Ming-Chi Kuo has shared his insights on what Apple's doing with AR and a possible headset in the future, and really echoes reporting that you did 2 years ago. So before this was in the supply chain to be found, I suppose, you reported Apple's 2020 roadmap basically for you know, like, I think it was even like before ARKit was a thing, and like how Apple's going to iterate on, you know, go iPhone and then eventually have a headset. So what's your reporting on that, and kind of where are we with AR and Apple making a headset?
Yeah, you know, 2020 was always a very aggressive timeline.
Sure.
Yeah. So I thought I would be surprised if they were able to stick to that.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be it's either going to be like real late in 2020 or 2021 or even after that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is something that's as imminent as the news this week made it sound.
Sure.
Obviously, when I reported it, that was just like aggressive timeline from, you know, 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd be shocked if it was a 2020.
The technology still feels like really immature. I mean, the quote report even mentions how it's going to be, you know, very iPhone dependent, but even if the iPhone's running the brains, you still have to have, you know, batteries in the headset to run the screen and communicate. And then you have the problems with running, you know, constantly running it through the phone drains the phone's battery by, you know, who knows how much, because it's very different to the watch, where it's kind of like, you open the app and then it has to go fetch the data. And even now the watch has become independent. But when the watch was new, you know, a lot of it was funded through the phone, but it was a lot more like waiting for you to do something before it would operate. Whereas, you know, with like an AR glasses, it's to be compelling, it almost has to be like constantly scanning the environment to do stuff. And if it's always running that through the phone, you know, you've got the wireless radios going constantly and you've got processing and networking running on the phone constantly. So it definitely feels like when the quote report said 2020, it felt too soon, because it says even like going to production the end of this year. And you just look at the market of other, you know, AR glasses type things, and none of them look like anything that you think Apple would ship, right? They still seem very like tech demo-y, prototype-y versus legitimate.
Like, what product. You can see from the outside is that, at least at Apple, Tim Cook is very excited about augmented reality and he's hyping this thing up, like, you know, AR in general is like the next big thing. But I recall it last year, there was the App Store turns 10 press release, and it had like all these like 10 milestones. And like one of them was that AR is on the App Store, but it might, you know, it might be a thing in the future. And he kind of acknowledged that it's not yet. And it, you know, as excited as we get about, you know, Apple and good products, like the glasses, it still seems like you really need to be convinced about what it's for, because it's pretty intrusive to put something on your face and wear it. And it's in, you know, more so than a watch that it's on your, literally on your face. And so it's gotta be really compelling to be, you know, worth any interest. So,
yeah. And Apple is still yet to, you know, even have a first party app that really uses augmented reality in any meaningful way. They
beyond measure
for all the third party apps, but there's essentially nothing on the phone itself that actually does any AR from Apple, at least in iOS 12.
Yeah, so
that's a good point.
Yeah. So that's a good takeaway, though, is that even with 2020 in the news again this week, that was always an aggressive timeline, and that was 3 years out, and that it could be 2021, 2022, you know, depending on how things even go. I remember a time when the Wall Street Journal had a report that said Apple was targeting 2020 for the Apple Car, like for it to be done, you know, and then here we are, like in, we're almost at 2020 and we're not quite in that future. So,
and you just highlight, like, the car project has been so tumultuous in, you know, their plans for it, and they keep firing people and hiring people. There's been so much churn, like, you know, reports from 3 years ago can't expect it to always be correct, because the outlook changes and the plans change. And, you know, they literally in the Apple Car project, the executives running it and the leaders have changed, you know, four times over at this point, and it still doesn't seem like they've got a clear focus on, you know, what they want to do.
Yeah, I think you can classify things like, you know, car project or even AR glasses as like R&D, you know, ongoing research and development. It's why they're not announced yet, I suppose. Like maybe AR Power should be in that camp.
The glasses are more tangible than the car is at this point. Like we haven't seen what they want to do, but it seems to me there's more stability in like the engineering and the direction of the company there, and that they're like, It's like they've got on a whiteboard a product that they want to make, and they're working towards making that. Whereas the impression you get with the car is they're still, you know, literally R&D. Like, we're just kind of guessing around here. We'll make an autonomous driving system. Maybe when we figure that out, we'll come back and think about, do we actually want to make a car or not? Whereas with AR, it's like you could see them actually, you know, like prototyping, you know, AR headsets at the moment. Maybe that's why it turns up in the supply chain already. But it still seems early for the, you know, a viable, good product to manifest itself.
Yeah. Well, all right,
I think that's
Mark.
Exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, well, Mark, I want to thank you for joining us. We've got now a week and a half to go before the event, and thanks for filling in some of the details about what to expect on this next Apple event and the one after that. And we thank you for joining us.
You got it, guys. Best of luck. Thank you.
This week, 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Text Expander from Smile. Text Expander is one of my favorite apps. It's a must-have app for working efficiently. You can easily make short text snippets for common things you type all the time, like email addresses, website URLs, and even today's date. Or you can create text snippets for longer entries like directions, reference requests, proposals, or answers to common questions. And now, Text Expander 6.5 is out with a new visual editor for snippets. The new editor gives you visual access to fill-ins, dates, and date math, nested snippets, and more. This makes unlocking the power of Text Expander even easier than before. Automation is easier too, with JavaScript syntax highlighting, and Text Expander snippets you use on your desktop or laptop work on your iPhone and iPad too. And Text Expander Windows users get offline editing support and improved expansion with the latest version. I've personally been a Text Expander customer for years. I can't imagine using my Mac without Text Expander. There's no typing or waiting to see if your shortcut worked. Just type your snippet and instantly watch your shortcut expand into the right text. Text Expander saves me a ton of time from having to think about the current date or copying and pasting the same HTML templates day after day. So visit textexpander.com/podcast for 20% off your first year and learn more about Text Expander. And select 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour in the Where Did You Hear About Text Expander section to let Smile know you came from the show and support the podcast. Again, that's textexpander.com/podcast. And select 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour to save 20% off your first year and even more time save typing. Our thanks to Text Expander for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, Maya, we're back, and let's kind of recap, the event that we've got in a week and a half. So we've got one more episode before the actual event that we'll discuss whenever it happens. But again, we expect to see Apple's TV channel as part of the TV app as part of the event. Maybe the Apple Wallet stuff, which would be, neat because it's earlier than we might have expected. But then it seems pretty certain now that the Apple video service that's like going to be the main star of the event won't be your product until like iPhones are out, new iPhones are out in the fall. And we've got some new details that we learned this week about what the new service could kind of like format wise be like. So, I think, if you know what to expect, it's kind of you could say this is going to be like maybe the most boring Apple event ever. Like if you want new Apple products, at least, where are you at on that right now?
Yeah, for me, it's not boring because it's like Apple starting its next chapter, essentially, before it has the next hardware category ready. It's really driving home on the services vision. So seeing how they like do it is always going to be interesting. But in terms of products to be announced and to be like usable after the show, it feels like it's going to be, a bit of a snooze fest, especially with, Mark's reporting and other stories we've heard this week. Like the thing in Mark's report where the original content isn't ready really to go mm-hmm. at all, essentially, is kind of like a downer, because for the last like 2 years there's been so much focus on Variety and Hollywood Reporter and all these sites mm-hmm. Publishing. Apple signed deals with this, let the actors are working on shows. You've got these huge names like Steve Carell and everybody else that I'm blanking my names on, but they've got millions yeah. and hundreds of like top names, and it doesn't seem like any of those shows are actually going to go live in 2 weeks time. And it's kind of like, great, we're going to get a few trailers and then it's going to be air power for services. Okay, we'll see you at some point at the end of the year. It's like, I feel like people are going to come away being pretty, let down.
Like, why are you telling this now? Kind of.
Yeah, like even
what can we go and do after the event?
Even if you're prime for no hardware, which I think we've seen, you know, the feelers of Apple laying those expectations in a few different places. Mm-hmm. It's even the services they're going to announce, I don't think people are going to be like emphatically overjoyed with. Like the other half of this, because without the original content in place, what they essentially have is, you know, a rebranding of a service that Amazon and, you know, many other people already offer, like YouTube TV, is we're going to sell you HBO Stars and Showtime.
But the thing about that for me is it really kind of gets me down is you can already go on your Apple TV and get a subscription to HBO or Showtime or Hulu or Netflix. Like, and a lot of their reporting is that Netflix isn't interested. HBO is like, it's going to be a last minute deal if they even catch HBO. But that the only difference for a customer is that previously you had to go to the App Store and download the app and acquire a subscription, whether through the app or through the web. But now what you can do is go to the TV app and do the same thing. Like, instead of having an app for it, maybe you can play it through the TV app and you manage your subscriptions that way. And that's like, that's not event worthy. You know, it's just because they've got the original content to tease out that it's even interesting and like it's only related because it's through the TV app. But it's like, that's like the ultimate reshuffling of something you could already do. Like, oh, now you can watch HBO on your device. Well, you could already.
Yeah, the only improvement on that is that rather than when you press play in the TV app, it's going to kick you out to the HBO app, is, mm-hmm. oh, now that HBO show will play inside the TV app. So you get a, you know, a slightly better consistency in terms of user experience, but
yeah. you know,
that's details that people aren't going to recognize
right.
or care about.
You know, the default, I think on tvOS, like the default mapping of the TV button is that it instead of going to the home screen, it first goes to the TV app and then it can go to the home screen. Like, that never made sense in the current arrangement. Like, it's really difficult to get all the viewable content in the TV app right now, and it sounds like that will continue to be the case. Like, but it'll at least make more sense whenever there's original content to be had there, plus natively playing content that you can subscribe to there. But that really is just a reshuffling of stuff you can already do. It's just a better for Apple, and it's a little bit smoother for the customer.
Even for Apple, I'm not sure that represents an improvement in like services revenue, even, because all those apps that are already on Apple TV, they have to give 30% of their share to Apple already, and it basically just seems they're getting the same arrangement with, you know, minor changes to how the UI works. And I'm hoping, which we kind of like referred to last week, that there's something more significant here on the TV project. Like, maybe the TV app is getting completely redesigned. Maybe there's some concept of, like, you know, Apple channels, and like there's an Apple Home channel, an Apple Drama channel, and it's kind of simulating a, you know, a cable experience. Because I kind of think that customers like and users like the idea of, you know, I just want to watch something on right now. I don't want to like go pick out my own show. And so, similar to how on Apple Music you have like radio stations of genres, you could translate that into like a TV experience with like, oh, here's, you can go on the Apple Drama channel and it plays dramas intermingling their own content and stuff that you subscribe to. That would be something that, you know, the TV app doesn't really have today. So maybe it'd be something more they can actually show in the absence of, you know, their actual original content stuff being done.
Yeah, I mean, there's like discovering content, you know, by browsing by genre, and it could be built on top of that, but with content that you can view, like just stream and not acquire, like through buying it through iTunes. And also, like, I had an idea a long time ago that we never made it into the show, but just the concept of how Beats Music first and then through Apple Music, they really highlighted human curators for putting together playlists that were different than, you know, what you'd find on other services that were kind of generated just automatically. And that same thing for TV, like having TV tastemakers. I mean, step one of that is that you've got the Sony guys picking which shows to put on Apple service. And so that's like tastemakers, like doing the job, part one. But another part of it could be just like TV editors that put together collections of shows, like you said, like channels, but it would be like the playlist model from Apple Music, where if you've got these, you know, even once Apple has enough of its own content, like you'd want to watch this in a row, like not binge a whole season, but like mix it episodes and that kind of thing. You know, more than just like, if you watch this, you'll like this too. But like, here, we put these together as like a way to spend, you know, your evenings in return to it. So, Maybe there's more to it than that, than kind of what's rumored. But
yeah, because it's kind of a downer after like Apple. You know, we've been hearing about Apple TV project rumors since like what 2015, and at the time it was like they're going to do some sort of skinny bundle, and then that kind of went away, and then it was, oh, the TV project's back on, but they really wanted to have like live local TV integrated into the service, but then it seems like they gave up on that as well, and so now we've just got, you know, the original content stuff, and then that pivotal point is not really ready for like I'll be upset if it's just, here's some trailers of stuff that's coming later in the year, and you can put HBO inside the TV app now. Like, if that is what it is, it'll be like, well, that was terrible. And I would prefer if that is what they have on, if that's all they've got, then I would personally prefer if they'd waited until later in the year when they actually have their original content offerings out the door. Because I was kind of hoping that, because we've been hearing some reports in the previous weeks and months that there are delays, and it seems like most of the shows are going to take time and aren't going to be ready for the spring. But I was kind of hoping they'd have like a handful, like five ready to go out the door now, and then they build out it over the summer. But it's based on, you know, like Mark's tone and kind of inferring from his reporting, it seems like they don't even have that, you know, done or anything. Like, it feels like we're literally just going to have trailers and then a third season, a couple karaoke to boot.
I don't know if they want to make those two things, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that was more of a joke, because obviously Couple Karaoke is like Apple Music only now.
Yeah, I don't think they want that to be like even adjacent to what you're thinking about. But I'm not an expert on like watching TV industry and like how these things come out. But from what I am exposed to, it does seem like there's often a period of the show has been created and it's finished. Same thing for movies. And then there's this whole like built-in 2 months plus of marketing. So like someone could watch it today, but we're not going to release it yet for, you know, marketing reasons. We're going to spend time seeding it to reviewers who can kind of build up anticipation about the show and like give out, you know, what they thought about the first two episodes and what it might be like, you know, like get that in the press. And then we'll do some advertising, you know, with a future date of coming soon, so we don't just drop it. And it's more of like a, if you're not confident in the series, then you do like no advertising and you just like drop it. You just like release it. And like that's the other like approach, is that it's like shock hype. It's like, there's this brand new thing nobody saw coming, and then go watch it today and hope it's a hit. And there was the reporting in Variety that was about some stars involved in the TV shows were concerned about the news of the video service itself overshadowing the shows that they worked on. And so, I mean, this certainly addresses that. If they show, you know, here's the service coming later this year, and then we have like all summer to have, you know, the promotion of the shows. But it's all new territory for Apple. And like, I didn't witness the events where they launch iTunes and, you know, launch iTunes TV shows and movies. Like, you can go back and watch them on YouTube, but like in the moment, didn't experience those as like an Apple observer because of age, I guess. But, you know, I think all those involved hardware too. Like, it was like, you're here for the hardware news and we're going to show you the entertainment news. And now it's like, this is almost a strictly entertainment services event, you know, I mean, almost literally.
Yeah, the only non-hardware event that isn't, you know, WWDC of recent years, and by recent, I mean like the last decade, is like the iBooks author event. Do you remember when they announced that?
Yeah,
and that was like 2012. Yeah. And that was nothing but iBooks author. That was all they talked about the entire 45 minutes. They didn't have an iPad to announce alongside it. They didn't have new Macs. It was just iBooks author. We're going to change publishing. Here's partnerships that we've done with textbook publishers. Okay, this is going to be great. And then we know how that didn't turn out. But that was their entire event.
Yeah, and the event itself, it seemed to be pretty big news in terms of like, you know, Apple events, Apple making news. And I think it was because the iPad was pretty new at the time. And so it was almost like a continuation of like even if it's not something, a new iPad, it's something new the iPad can do, you know, have real textbooks, even though it didn't pan out. In this case, it's like, it's strictly a service, strictly services. New things our iPhones and iPads can do, but not new iPhones and iPads. Another angle on this is that, you know, in the last like 5 years, there have been Apple events where people just take away just like, oh, that was it. Like, that was the most boring event we've ever witnessed. And it's like, you know, started to kind of like how excited you are after an event. You know, you're not wowed because it seemed kind of samey. This won't be that. It won't be samey, but it could be like literally the most boring event ever if you follow Apple because of the new shiny hardware, you know, or even like, you know, WhizBang software. And like, there's been discussions like within covering, you know, quote unquote Apple Entertainment of like how much do we cover like the granular steps of like the TV show production, you know, when it becomes a story in like the Hollywood Reporter or Deadline or you know, Variety. And I think to a, like at a point, this will all just be as normal as iTunes, the store, or Apple Music, the service, and it'll just be like built in. But for now, it is more interesting than it will be because it's you know, new territory for Apple. Even if it's like, they're definitely not the first technology company to also start doing a video service. I mean, I think Amazon's like the closest at doing it well. Like Netflix is all they do. Same for Hulu. But like Amazon, you don't know them for their video service, but they have a real video service that gets awards and like people watch content there. That's exclusive, you know, to them. And so like that's kind of how I see that. Like, it's just like they're going to fall on like the Amazon steps. But eventually,
how many like trailers do you think they're going to show of their original content?
If they could, I don't know, if they could launch like even in the fall with 8 to 12 shows?
Yeah, it feels like they need like 10, right? You need double digits to feel like, substantial.
Like 8 to be conservative, 12 to be like a little bit more like, oh, they got a lot ready. But there's so much that's been reported as, you know, green light, go make it now, you know, over the last 2 years, that surely some of the early stuff like Steven Spielberg, Amazing Stories reboot can have episodes ready, you know, to go this summer if they wanted to. And
so let's say they're going to launch in the fall with 12, right? Mm-hmm. And then for now, they'll have trailers of what, 4, 5, do you think?
Yeah. Well, there's also different categories because, I mean, there's like original content. This is a TV show that would have existed on Netflix or elsewhere. There's also the Oprah content stuff that Apple's officially announced, but it's super vague and generic as to what it actually is. You know, it's – then there's licensed content from the creators of Sesame Street that isn't Sesame Street, but it's kids programming. There's some stuff that's French television, but season one is now Apple's. And they're going to make a season 2. There's like a lot of stuff going on here. Everything but like a news show, like a straight up news show. And one of the shows is a news, you know, a fictitious news show. So they've got a lot coming in different.
Because what I'm getting at is if they do 5 trailers of then shows that they've, you know, signed off and paid for that haven't existed before, right? If they only do 5 and then the takeaway is they're not very interesting, then that's just going to like pan the news cycle on the Apple video service all the way through until like September when they have a more fully fledged roundup of actual content.
I think if they could show, let's say, the Steven Spielberg Amazing Stories reboot, which sounds like, you know, at the time it was one of the earlier ones to be reported, if not the first, like Twilight Zone meets like Stranger Things vibe. Like if you can do that and have a neat trailer for that, you know, and get people excited, like, oh, that's going to be, that's mysterious, like what that, and also nostalgic, like that, you know, what is this coming? But then also have like the, I think it's the morning show drama is like how it's described. Yep. I think that's the title with Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston. And I think that's also Steve Carell, right? And so those are big names to put on one show, you know, on a TV show these days. And so if you show that, like that's also at least big, you know, news in like the TV world. So then those are two very different things. And then whatever the Oprah stuff is like a whole nother genre. So you've got like a sci-fi series, a comedy drama series, and then the original content that Oprah's going to be doing, you know.
Don't forget Homes, where they take a documentary around expensive rich houses.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Netflix version of that. And it's like HGTV is like a series, you know, a single series. Like, you know, it's been so long since that's been reported. I had forgotten, but. There's a lot of different kind of shows they can do, and if they can show like one type of each genre, then at least gives us a feel for what to expect. But you know, it's very different in terms of like discussing what Apple's doing to be excited about a streaming video service.
So. There's definitely going to be a ruckus post the event of very conflicting opinions on what everyone just watched.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, it's not really a topic for this week, but like. the whole story of AT&T owning HBO now and not liking the way it's ran, and even though it's like the most successful like premium channel that there is, and like the executive of like 15 years, I believe, being out and people around him being out, like those are all candidates for like Apple to hire, and it would almost be surprising if Apple doesn't like pick up some like ex HBO people in the mix, and we haven't really heard that yet. There were more hires than the Sony TV people that were poached. They put their team together, but I wouldn't be surprised like if there's more news around like people from the fallout of like all the media shifting and like people, yeah, you know, that were running their own thing. Now they're not. So let's talk about the details that we learned about Apple News magazines this week. So there's some stuff in the macOS beta that I believe Steve Trout and Smith uncovered that kind of strongly suggests to me, at least, that Apple News magazines at some level is literally what you get from Texture, the app, in terms of like the formatting and the categories and everything. But now it's in Apple News instead of Texture, which wasn't on the Mac at all. So
yeah.
What's your feeling here?
Yeah. So Steve found a file in the binary that listed like the categories supposedly for Apple News magazines, and the categories are one-to-one identical with what the Texture app offers today. And then, moreover, he found that the actual file format for these issues is PDF-based, which is, again, what Texture does, because they basically just scan the printed magazines, package them into PDFs, and then send them out for people to download and read on their iPad. The PDF thing, I really hope that's not what this service is. Like, if they're just repackaging print magazines as PDFs, it is going to be rough stuff. Like
even worse
on the
news, right?
On the iPad, you can get away with it, right?
Sort of. Yeah, it's not great.
It's a roughly page size device. You can show a screen with reasonably sharp text and enough space to have pretty images around, and then you can swipe between the pages. But on the phone, you just PDFs cannot work. They just don't work. Like, you can't put a scan of a newspaper or a magazine and shrink it to a phone size, even the iPhone XS Max, and have a nice experience like panning and zooming around the effectively image just to be able to read the story.
I mean,
like,
it's tough on a 9.7-inch iPad because it's not quite a full-size sheet of paper, you know? So definitely on the phone sizes.
In my deepest of hearts, I can't see Apple being like, this is our minimum acceptable quality for the new service. Because they're not stupid. They know most people use iPhones. iPhones dwarf iPads 10 to 1, probably more. Most people read news on their phone. The new service, to be good, needs to be good on the phone. And a scanned PDF is not going to do that. It's just not. Now, you can have a PDF that is phone optimized, for instance, but you're still going to face limits of the PDF format. Like, it's still effectively going to be an image, right? You, for instance, PDFs don't really let you change the font size because they're kind of like fixed size, right, renders, essentially. You say this is 300 pixels wide, put the layout in, you're done. What I want to see is the content being released in, you know, more flowable HTML-like format. You know, what does Apple News support? Apple News format, which is exactly what this is intended. You know, this is the best experience that they could offer. You can have interactivity. You can have resizable text with different font sizes. You can have embedded video, images, stuff moving around with animations. And we've seen, you know, a handful of publications like mess around with that initially, especially when Apple News first came out. You had like wide exclusives that were done in Apple News format, and they look really cool, but then they don't keep up. But I'm not expecting every story to be like some whiz-bang, you know, interactive experience, because that's kind of what doomed the iPad books, newspaper magazine idea originally.
But, like, fancy iBooks now. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they just don't, they're too much work, and so they just don't happen. And especially on, like, news, when you're pumping out stories, you know, many times a day, you just don't have the resources or the time to make those, you know, rich experiences. But you can do better than the PDF scan of what's getting printed out to a, you know, a 10-inch A4 page that you buy at the magazine stand. Like,
yeah.
Just having something that's closer to, you know, inline images and video with reflowable text and different font options is a million times better. Because if they just release it as PDFs that are iPad, you know, that are sized for that, not subscribing to the Apple News service will be better than subscribing to the Apple News service, because everything in the moment is essentially like RSS, and it does reflow and it does let you adjust the font size and you know, the basic fundamentals like that. Like, there was some funny coverage of this leak where it was like, the Apple News app will even let you download issues. Like, downloading is not innovation. Like, come on. Like, you just need, there's a minimum bar here, and if it, PDFs do not reach that bar, and
we've discussed on this show that that's what Texture has been. It's been, you know, the easiest scalable solution for publishers, which is to put like the, you know, what you almost what you print out through a printer, and then make that in a file that, that you, you know, put in this single app. And that surely this has got to be more than that for it to be worth subscribing to. Otherwise, just recommend Texture. You know, why bother? Besides, like, having it pre-installed, if you can't do that better, then you know, please don't do it. You had a good thought though, which is that to keep the full catalog of Texture, then you might have to concede and say, well, some of this is going to be PDF based, but we'll encourage the biggest, the best names, the ones that we want to highlight the most, to take advantage of an Apple News format, to make it flowable, resizable, more interactive.
Like you bought out this company that had deals with, you know, 200 plus magazines. Mm-hmm. It would probably be like stupid just to say, we're going to dump all of you and you all have to change this format. Yeah. Even if it was just to preserve the back catalog, like, if I want to see this service going to launch in March, maybe I want to read the January issue. And now, like, it'd be weird if it launched to completely bare. And that's a friction point that brand new services have to face. But if you've, you know, it bought Texture already and it's been releasing content for the last, you know, however many years, it probably is a bit silly to drop that on the floor and start fresh, like, completely. So mm-hmm. I'm kind of like hoping that, yeah, I'm kind of hoping that this kind of exists in there as like the old deprecated way of doing things, and going forward, they want you to push and do it in, you know, something more like an Apple News format. And I believe the Wall Street Journal report that quoted the Wall Street Journal negotiations for right. Apple News even said something like Apple wants publishers to republish their content in, you know, a dynamic format, essentially. So there is some hints there that this is in the works. And I really would be, like, disappointed if it just turns out to be scanned PDF pages.
Yeah. In the discussion about what's on the web and what's in a magazine, there is a quality bar that's different, though. That, like, in Apple News, I've not gotten into it in a way that, like, I open it every day, but I do try and put things that I'm interested in and follow and see how it works and everything. And, like, so I'll put Runner's World, for example, and they have a print magazine which has, like, you know, monthly issue of planned content, and it's, you know, long form, mix of news and different things. And then they've also got their website, of course, and that's more like blog posts, and they can be short, very short form and high volume. And, like, to open up the Runner's World magazine, you're going to see, like, their best work for the month. And to open the website is like the latest, you know, content in an ever, you know, running flow that you've got to keep publishing. And so regardless of, like, what the format is, like, right now you'll get a better flowing format from the website content for Runner's World. But if you have a PDF, basically a PDF scan of a magazine as, you know, the magazine content that you pay for, I think what you're paying for, the format's worse, but then, like, the content is more valuable. So I can see that being, like, you know, if it is just Texture as we know it today, then that is what makes it more compelling, is that it's like, it's not the format, but it's the way that you prepare the content monthly. Just you're going to have better stuff than daily, I guess.
but like, just pinching to zoom on the phone, you're already lost. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's not great. And I hope,
because you know what that philosophy is? Oh, something's better than nothing. You know what that philosophy is? Marzipan.
Well, it's modern.
Yeah. And, I mean, this will be double Marzipan, because the news app will be Marzipan on the Mac, so you can pinch and zoom all over the place.
Yeah. The other thing that Steve Trenton-Smith said is that most of the code is written in Swift, which, to me, not being a developer, just says that it's newly written code to model the old features of Texture, but it's now in the news app.
Well, when was Texture released? 2015? That was post-Swift.
Yeah, and it's also a cross-platform.
What my optimistic take on his findings is that they basically like copied and pasted the whole texture code base in to like get the started templates. With the beta and like trial it out and get a feel for it. But then they've built infrastructure around it that is like Apple News native, and the remnants of the texture stuff is still like hanging about in there. But that's the optimistic take.
Yeah. The whole thing, it still seems curious to me, like the questions that we'll see at the event answered is Apple News magazines, as we believe it will be called, just magazines, or does it also try and tackle the whole newspaper's paywall issue? And right now there's like plenty of support for, like, I don't think I really knew this, but subscribing through Apple News to the New York Times, for example, like I knew you could bring your own Wall Street Journal subscription and fill it in through the Apple News app so that you're check mark, you're signed in, you can see the content that would otherwise be hidden. But I'm not sure that I knew that you could like Apple Pay your way to a subscription through the Apple News app, but that's been a feature for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. You can subscribe in app.
Yep.
And to select partners. It doesn't like.
And it's all for varying rates. Like it can be $3 a month, $10 a month, $30 a month. Like there's a big range there.
It's literally just like taking what the same in-app purchases from the App Store for the standalone apps and just exposing them into Apple News.
Yeah. And so I really wonder, like, if it's the 200 plus magazines for Apple News magazines, or if it is the same subscription also gives you access to newspapers, because then it is a much better deal, at least in terms of what it offers. But it's, you know, and then how big is the interest in this service, like digital magazines? So, you know,
And one thing that was in Mark's report from today is that Apple does intend to sell the services separately, which I don't think comes much surprise to both of us, but they may do like bundle discounting. So, because my thing here is like the TV service, I can see how, you know, they could get to 50, 100 million users. The news service seems like something that is not going to get to 50, 100 million users on its own. Like, I feel like they're going to have to package other bits into that to make it a compelling purchase.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Admit it, you think cybercrime is something that happens to other people. You may think that no one wants your data, or that hackers can't grab your passwords or credit card details, but you'd be wrong. Stealing data from unsuspecting people on public Wi-Fi is one of the simplest and cheapest ways for hackers to make money. When you leave your internet connection unencrypted, you might as well be writing your passwords and credit card numbers on a huge billboard for the rest of the world to see. That's why we recommend taking back your privacy and protecting yourself from cybercriminals by using ExpressVPN. Turning on ExpressVPN protection only takes one click, and ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. Protecting yourself with ExpressVPN costs less than $7 a month, and ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. It also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. ExpressVPN also removes restrictions and creates internet without borders, defeating content restriction and censorship to deliver unlimited access to video, music, social media, and more from anywhere in the world. And ExpressVPN offers unlimited bandwidth with a VPN that's built for speed. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/happyhour. That's expressvpn.com/happyhour for 3 months free with a 1 year package. Visit expressvpn.com/happyhour to learn more. Our thanks to ExpressVPN for sponsoring 9to5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, man, you covered a story today, which the story in general was big news in a slow week, I guess, which is Spotify. I think they filed a formal complaint in the EU against Apple, and they had a really trendy video and marketing website that they've created to say Apple treats us, Spotify, unfairly. And here's a timeline since 2007 when the iPhone came out of how poorly we've been treated. What's Spotify's complaint, and then break down, you know, what's going on here?
Yeah, so they have a formal complaint with the European Commission filed, and they have started like a massive PR campaign to, you know, basically garner public support for their antitrust filing. because they have like a full, they have a blog post, they have a video on YouTube about it, and they have a full timetoplayfair.com domain where it just talks about, you know, what Apple's behavior and why Spotify thinks it's unfair. And you could, without knowing anything about this story, you can probably guess what they're not happy with. Money.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like that Apple takes 30% and then 15% after a year if they keep subscribing. And on top of that, they cannot offer alternative payment options with inside the app, nor can they even mention the alternative payment options inside the app. If you have to go to the web to do it and then go back in, and all you can do is log in with your username and password.
Which is a years old problem for...
This is something we have heard from so many developers over the time. And some of them conform and just get along with it. Others leave and just let you log in, see like Amazon Kindle or Netflix recently, more recently. And then you have like Spotify, which did try in-app purchase for a while, but then the way they got around the problem was they just increased the in-app prices by $3 to offset the 30% price difference. So they would sell their $9.99 subscription for $12.99 and then also let you buy outside the app for the normal price. They've stopped doing that now because they think it's unfair. And obviously, it's not great. It doesn't make them very competitive against Apple Music if the iOS customer sees a $12.99 price, not a $9.99 price. So their current status quo is they do the Netflix model where you're just logging outside the app and don't mention it at all inside the app.
Clearest, like most direct argument that they made here, you know, which is not a new argument, but that Apple can sell essentially the same catalog of music for $10 and not give up 30%, and Spotify has the, you know, just say it's identical, the same library. It's not, but if it were for, you know, $10 and then Apple gets 30% of it, and after a year, 15% of it, if you have a continuing subscription with no gap.
Which is a relatively new development. Like,
yeah, I mean, the last year or so, yeah, it's pretty new.
Yeah, I think it started 2016, so it's pretty new, like the 15% change, which I think does highlight that we see Apple as this like inflexible beast, but clearly something motivated them enough to reduce it down to 15. And it wasn't just, you know, the big players complaining. It was also they wanted to incentivize, you know, more apps to get on board with a subscription train, which ultimately increases their bottom line revenue. Yeah. So there's always this constant, like, you know, Apple's going to do what it thinks is going to make the most money, especially regarding, you know, App Store services revenue, because that's essentially what the business is, just change the rates until to maximize income. So, yeah. But it's not like 30% is an unbreakable wall, because we have seen, you know, a change there already.
Right. It's some parts of this that also sound to me that I think are less their complaint, but they're just trying to make a case that Apple doesn't treat them as a first-class citizen, like they can their own service, is that Siri can't integrate with Spotify in the same way that Apple Music can, and that separately, even though it's the same thing, HomePod can't play Spotify content directly, which I think in that part of the argument, that's just like filler, because how many HomePods are sold? A couple million. And it's just not a big part of the business. And like, you know, we've discussed like some of, do you decide HomePod or not based on Spotify or Apple Music? And like, do you switch to Apple Music from Spotify because you want a HomePod that bad? Or is a smart speaker a smart speaker, and you're actually better off with every other smart speaker because they all work with Spotify well, if you care that much about Spotify? There was also a few mentions of the Apple Watch that caught my attention. They try and make the case that they wanted to have a Spotify Watch app from day one, and that Apple didn't listen to like their needs about what they needed to make a watch app. And then Apple eventually, you know, allowed watch apps. And finally, this past year with watchOS 12, they've been able to make a watch app. But I don't think they're totally genuine about how it all works on their...
Let's talk about the watch thing specifically, because... Yeah. In they have on this timetoplayfair.com/timeline page, they have like a big long list of all the things where Spotify launches and then up to today, and they just throw in different bits where Apple, in their opinion, screwed them over. The watch thing appears three times, once in 2015 when
watch is new,
which is when the watch first came out, and the quote is, "Us," as in Spotify, "Hey Apple, we love your watch, can we make an app for that?" Them, "Nah."
There's Watch Kit, and then which you could do kind of a remote app, but you couldn't do a real app, and then you could eventually do a real app, but
nothing really, like the audio APIs just weren't there, correct? But they kind of make this like a Apple's picking on Spotify situation, but especially in the watch case, you know, Apple's essentially picking on everyone because they limit the watch in thousands of different ways. And you could, like, there are plenty of app ideas in 2015 that I'd have loved to make to the watch, but you just can't because they didn't offer those systems and services. And it wasn't like they were letting other third-party audio apps do this stuff on the watch and then blocking, you know, Spotify specifically. They weren't discriminating against Spotify one-to-one. It was just like the platform-wide restrictions.
Yeah, and where they end up on their infographic is that they eventually made a watch app as of this year because of the software, but the watch app that they made is just that you can, if you're a premium subscriber, you can download music offline, I guess manually syncing it. But you could do that before WatchOS 5. Like
the current watch app that's on the Spotify watch app that's on the store is just like a remote control for, you know, your phone. And that functionality could have been implemented with WatchKit 1.0 in 2015. So unless there's something that they're not mentioning specifically, they don't say that we submitted a watch app to Apple and Apple rejected it. That's not what they say at all. I think what they wanted in 2015 was to make, you know, the Apple Music equivalent Spotify app that can play music in the background and do all this, you know, whiz bang music service stuff that the watch didn't support at all, including for the fact that Apple Music wasn't on the watch until 2017. So, you know, you could say Apple was screwing itself over, but
but even so, on the watch, they don't do
background streaming or anything like that.
They don't do everything that they could do, like,
no.
Because Chaos made the, you know, unofficial Spotify app using the Spotify API, you know, without permission, that they eventually said, hey, pull that. You don't have permission to use our API that way. They're not even going as far as what he did, right? Like, so I was mistaken. I thought you could download music, but that's what he was able to pull off, right? But that Spotify is just, they're just remote, or you can change like what's remotely playing. You know, you can do Wi-Fi speakers and stuff, and with Spotify Connect. So
yeah, the Spotify app today is like what the music app on the watch was. Like the remote app was, okay, where you just control the phone essentially.
Yeah.
You can't store or stream.
And they don't have an Apple TV app that they could create, you know, if they wanted to have something for the Apple TV. They don't do anything there.
Yeah, and on the HomePod, they could implement Siri shortcuts and get a very baseline experience, but we know it's not, you know, really what you want there. But again, on the HomePod, they don't let any third-party audio app come onto the platform. So, like, on those points, they definitely dilute their argument for at least people that are technically minded, because it would be far stronger if, like, Apple was picking on Spotify specifically by, oh, they suddenly opened an audio API for the HomePod, and then, you know, Overcast and Pandora and all these apps suddenly were on, but Spotify was blocked. Like, then you could be like, yeah, look, Apple's picking on Spotify specifically. But that's, you know, not really the case.
Yeah, Pandora has an Apple Watch app with offline playback. Like Pandora, I think of as like pre-Spotify. I think it is. You know, and they used to just be like radio streaming, you know, put together an algorithm station. They've, for their premium service, they've pulled off making a watch app that can have offline music that you sync over, just like you do with Audible audiobooks, that, you know, or Overcast podcast episodes. So that's where, like, I think Spotify's real argument is about 30% cut. And that is unfair. And everything, like, so much of what else they thrown in here is like a distraction if you know the details. And it's like, you can easily counter argument. And if it was just about the App Store 30%, like, that's super clear. And you can, and I think it's also fair to argue that that is unfair. There are disadvantages of that.
Yeah. The timetoplayfair.com website is not really playing fair. Like,
they're fast and loose with that.
It is biased, right? It's that Spotify wants to make Apple look bad. This website makes Apple look bad. And there's no, like, and some of the things that are on the page are definitely true, and some of the things are not so true, and some of the things apply, but they apply to everybody.
Yeah.
The actual complaint that I'm sure they filed the EU maybe mentions, like, the Siri situation on the iPhone, but again, you know, they don't let anyone on the... And that's kind of where you start edging into this, is this allowed? Like, can Apple choose, you know, what can and cannot be done on its platform? That's ultimately what this gets down to, because... Mm-hmm. Like, at one point in the iPhone's lifespan, there were no apps at all. There were no third-party apps at all. 2007, right? The first year. Was that considered anti-competitive? That they didn't let anybody in? Like, you can't argue that a company has to provide a third-party app facility for its devices. Because then you could say, well, oh, why don't they let, like, this... And like, why can't the AirPods run apps? Like, it's just a stupid comment, right? Like, just because, like, the iPod, you know, the music player existed for years and years and years, and they didn't have an app store or anything of the kind. And they were by far the number one dominant music player. And I'm sure competing music services would like to have apps on the iPod, but, you know, Apple didn't offer a store. Did that make them anti-competitive? I don't think so. Like, and then the problem you have to come at is that at the end of the day, it's Apple's platform that they let other people operate on top of. Like, you can disagree with it and you can think it's, you know, not fair that they take this money, but at the end of the day, it's their control, and there's no, like, really legal basis at the moment that you can call on to say that this is not correct, because in the current App Store arrangement, Apple doesn't allow categories of apps to exist at all. Like, forget 70% of your income. You can get 0% if you're making, you know, like an alternative home screen, or if you're making a ROM emulator that doesn't even distribute copyrighted video game ROMs in the binary. Like, if it's just the player, Apple reject that as well, because they believe it will lead to piracy and also compromises. You know, people can theoretically get free games that way by sideloading versus buying through the App Store. But if you're one of those developers, you're even in a worse state than what Spotify is, because you can't even be on the App Store at all. Now, is that anti-competitive? Is Apple being, you know, unfair to these classes of apps, or is it just their decision on what is allowed to be on the store? Mm-hmm. I don't know what you think about that, Zach.
Well, I think it's a years old problem, in that nothing's new has happened here except for that they've got a nice marketing, you know, campaign around it, and they've got the EU complaint or the EC complaint, but I also thought about the fact that Apple, you know, they took the month-long process to review the Apple acquisition of Shazam, and Europe thought that was okay. And so, and it was, what they looked at was, is this anti-competitive? Is this dangerous for Apple to own this, you know, to have, you know, tracking information about music, what people listen to, and have a music service? And they thought that was okay. You know, there probably is a you know, some regulation to be made, and it will vary by region, but it's just like any other regulation that we discuss on the show. It's like, it will vary by country and by process, and it won't be one size fits all. Apple's going to do the least that they have to do. There's no clear, like, I don't think, because even Spotify is saying this is what we prefer to have, except for like 0% cut, right? Like, they're not saying we'd be happy with 10 or 15.
Yeah. That's another problem. It's like, at the moment you've got 30 and then 15 after a year. Would Spotify be happy if it was 15 flat? They don't really say that.
I really don't think they care about the Siri stuff and the watch stuff and like anything else. I think it's just about that the money split, and that everything else is filler. But that it's, you know, there's no like counter offer here.
Yeah, because they don't want to propose a number, because then they want as low as possible. So if they say 15 and then Apple goes, okay, here's 15, then they're going to be like flat-footed, because they really want zero, essentially.
Yeah,
but
because
what they want is to be able to let people buy using their payment method in the Spotify app. Mm-hmm. And that would be, quote-unquote, fair to Spotify, but then you could argue it's not fair to Apple, because then they're getting zero money for an app that's running entirely on their platform, entirely on their devices.
Yeah, I think of Amazon as like the biggest player in this battle, and that they just said, we're big enough to not worry about it. We're just not going to let you buy, you know, ebooks in the Kindle app, or even like tell you where to buy them. You just can load them through, you know, as a cloud feature if you've already bought them on Amazon, but we don't want to share the revenue with Apple, so there's no bookstore or comic book store, or, you know, etc. And that they get along just fine, and that Spotify, like, it might just come down to like their business model isn't as great as Amazon's, and they're going to be hungrier than Amazon, so they're going to fight harder about this. But, you know, I see the community reaction is strong about this, because nobody loves the 30% cut, or even the 15% cut, like whatever. No,
I mean, I'm a developer myself. Like, yeah. I would love it if the cut was lower. Like, don't get me wrong, but what am I going to do? Like, this, at the end of the day, it feels like it's in Apple's court to set the rules of their own devices, and it doesn't really seem like you can't make a legal argument on it feels unfair. Like, it needs to be bounded by some strict, you know, some strictness. And I think the best argument that Spotify can make is the whole elevating Apple Music above competing music services because of the structure. But I think even if you if they said that 30% of the money that goes to Apple Music now is just like donated to charity, that wouldn't help Spotify out. Spotify wants the 30% themselves. Like, it's just, it's kind of like an impasse of, oh, do you support, you know, the quote unquote little guy who, because like we know Spotify doesn't make money, so they're on the ropes in terms of like financials. And I'm not like willing them to go away, but you know, there is not a human right for companies to exist and thrive, right? Like,
Oasis was a different company than Spotify too, because I'm not a Spotify user, so I don't feel strongly about them. But I do feel like they're doing something that has been easily copied, you know, by Apple and Google and Pandora, and like that they're not doing much to, even if they were early on saying, here's a subscription music service, that they're not making a service that just could not exist if they weren't the ones doing it. That, you know, there's a reason it can be cloned so easily. It's like they're taking a catalog of entertainment and they're distributing it, and they rent it to you. Like, they're not making it. And they're doing more stuff with like trying to back original podcasts, you know, like that they even still, like, it won't be exclusive to Spotify, and if it will be, then people will be mad about that. So like they're not even doing things like producing TV shows that would have been on other services if they weren't the ones producing them. Like, so they're really not,
like, even if you did put Spotify on level pegging with, like, if you gave them a 0% cut,
yeah,
Apple Music would still gain millions and millions of subscribers marginalize them.
Yeah, it had to be built in too with Apple Music for it to be totally fair. You know, and you're never going to get that. Like, and it is built in on like Samsung's new phones. It's the new bloatware on the Samsung phones. You know, which, like, and that kind of makes it fair that you've made that deal with Samsung to be pre-installed there. You know, and I also wonder, is the EU complaint because they think they've got, you know, there's more of an appetite to deal with this in Europe? Or is it that they're because they're based in Europe? Like, why isn't this also like simultaneously or first a U.S. complaint?
Yeah, they say in their blog post that they filed with the EU because they're a Swedish company headquartered inside Europe, and they may pursue complaints in other regions in the future. But it is also true that the EU courts have historically been more lenient towards anti-competitive rulings than domestic in the U.S.
Yeah, so, you know, it got a lot of attention today, but also just looking back over the last, like, few years of coverage, this is definitely their slickest, like, marketing campaign around it, and it's a formal complaint, but it's not the first time they've raised these issues. And part of me thinks, too, that they seem to be the biggest critics of the way that the App Store works, the revenue split works. And I can't help but think it's also just because, like, kind of their business model sucks, and, like, more successful services don't have as big of an issue because they have a business that, like, doesn't live or die because of the App Store policies.
Yeah, and there are millions and millions and millions of developers who cannot survive on the App Store at the moment because the 30% cut is too prohibitive for them, right? But you just don't hear about them. And does that mean Apple's going to change its mind? You know, probably not. They're a company at the end of the day. If they think they can make more money by putting the rate down, then they will. And that's what they did with the 15% thing. They put the rate down to encourage all these apps to go subscriptions so that over time they make more revenue in total. But, like, because they don't dominate the phone market, and they don't really dominate anything. Like, the problem is you can't define an anti-competitive market as just the market of iPhone users, because then you could say, well, you know, Spotify is unfair because they don't let you buy Apple Music inside the Spotify store, like, because this is stupid, right?
But like, they don't have a phone and a platform. Like, they haven't done all of that work.
Yeah, if you go into desktop Spotify, you can't buy Apple Music from inside there because Spotify is not going to want you to do that, and you certainly can't do it at 0%. Like, if they're going to advertise other services, you're going to pay for it. Like, And yes, it is perfectly correct that it does not cost Apple 30% cut to provide the service that they provide, right? It's just true. It's like saying when you buy a MacBook Pro, it doesn't cost them $2,500 to make a MacBook Pro. They make a profit margin on it. They're a company making money, and you can look at their reports, and their services gross margin is like 60%. And most of the services, at least today, comes from the App Store. So the App Store probably makes, you know, about 50%. It makes a lot of money. But all you're essentially saying is that it's not fair that Apple can be this big, but so they should make less money so a different company can make more money. And, you know, that sounds all like nice, but it's not really like something you can base a law on. Like, and like you say, Spotify does not lay out a counter proposal in this website. They do not say anything firm. Like, I would be more on their side if they could say, you know, if Apple let us link out to our own payment method inside the app, we would be happy. Because at least then they've got like a firm stance. At the moment, it just feels like they're trying to claw for whatever they can and as much as they can. And even if they do, like, the problem with the linking thing is that then it starts twisting the other direction where every single big company will just, you know, do their own payment method and Apple gets nothing. And it's not like Apple's providing no service at all. Mm-hmm. And they would say that the iOS customer base is worth 30%. If it's not worth 30%, then you don't make a Spotify app. Mm-hmm. Like, so, but you're completely right. This is like history repeating itself. With the same companies essentially complaining about the same problems and the same policies, and it's just repeating itself over and over again. And this time around, we got a nice marketing campaign and, you know, an EU complaint, and right. It's kind of in the EU's court now to whether they want even to investigate it. Like, I think they've got a tough road ahead of them, because it would be in Apple's power to remove Spotify from the App Store completely. And they probably have a legal justification to do that, because they already cut out, you know, thousands and thousands of categories of applications they just don't want on their store at all. And in many ways, you could view it as Spotify's lucky to be in the App Store at all, like, and be able to make any money. Like, mm-hmm. And it's sad, and it's like, yeah, these companies can't exist, but that is the business model. That is life is unfair. Like, I don't know what people want. Like, you just want to force Apple to make less money? Well, then they're just going to change their mind. Like, what if Apple has the right to turn the App Store off tomorrow? They could make no third-party applications. They're not going to do that because it makes the phone worse, but they could do that. And if they can do that, I think they probably have the perfect legitimate right to set whatever percentage share they want of the money. And you can not like it, and you can think it's, you know, Apple being mean, but at the end of the day, I don't think there's really much to shake that position right now. There's nothing new.
Yeah,
the timing of all actually changes it.
Yeah, the timing of all this is seems to be cleverly positioned right before Apple starts taking, you know, competing also with Netflix and I guess publishers, you know, new other publishers, like, you know, maybe with the big subscription services event. But also, it's the same week in the same month that there's the story about I haven't looked at it closely, but the way artists are paid. And how much, and that, like, every service except for Apple Music is opposed to what's happening, and that Apple was like, didn't fight, you know, I guess artists making more money was the, like, super high level of it all.
And there aren't set rates, but basically it means that the streaming services are going to make less margin on.
Right.
And I don't think Apple's being particularly altruistic there. I don't think that's being them being really nice. I think they just know that they can stomach the slight price difference, and if it goes through, it probably makes it even harder for the competitors to live on. Like, yeah. that is the cynical but probably realistic view. True. I don't think Apple's like standing up for the artists, like, yeah, we'll pay them more. I think it's more like, we know if there's an extra like 1 cent for every stream more expensive, we know that we're Apple, we can stomach that price, but everyone else can't, so it'll just be good for us in the end. I somehow doubt that Apple's like, you know, being the good man here and like, yeah, we'll just give you more money for no reason. Like that,
yeah.
That's the headline, but I doubt that is like their motivation. They know what they're doing. They make as much money as they can.
This week, 9to5 Mac Happy Hour is sponsored by Hair Club, because your confidence is important. And sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of the Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. Hair Club is the leader in total hair solutions. With a legacy of success for over 40 years, they're not new at this either. They understand the emotions you're feeling and know the questions you have. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or to learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. Hair health can have such an impact on our self-esteem and self-image, but we can't always control how healthy our hair is, and we don't all have Craig Federighi's amazing head of hair. but it doesn't have to be that way. Go to hairclub.com/happyhour today for a free hair analysis and a free take-home hair care kit, all valued over $300. That's hairclub.com/happyhour for a free hair analysis and free hair care kit. hairclub.com/happyhour. Experience your hair and your life at its best, only with Hair Club. I'm certain you'll love the club. Our thanks to Hair Club for sponsoring 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour. All right, Mayo, a few things to wrap up the show this week. First is news today that was kind of out of nowhere that you covered, which is that Apple Music is now on the Fire TV. That's the Amazon box, like Amazon's version of an Apple TV streaming box. And they've got different models. Does it apply to like the Fire Stick? I guess that's a
yes.
Fire. Okay. And then they've got a Fire Cube, which is like literally a box cube that plays content. So what's the story there? And then also it's expanding from the US. So tell me what's going on with Apple Music now.
Yeah. So when I first saw this break, I misread it as Apple TV app now available on Amazon Fire TV, which would have been a lot more interesting.
Sure. Yeah.
But that might still happen. And this might be like a precursor to that. But for now, the Apple Music service can be activated and played through the Amazon Voice Assistant on the Fire TV. There's not like a dedicated app you can browse. You can just talk to Siri and get it to play.
Just like on the Echoes, there's no visual.
Yeah.
I mean, on the Echo Show and Spot, there's nothing visual. It's just talking to the assistant and having it play.
Yeah, it's essentially taking the Echo service and putting it on the TV as well.
Yeah, I hope that Siri, not through Siri Kit, where you've got to really make it on as a customer, but like that Siri gets the equivalent of what Alexa is doing with music services. You know, that takes one thing out of Spotify's complaint list.
you mean Siri Kit, not Siri Shortcuts?
Right. I hope it's like the official Siri can do this. Like, if you're a music service, you can work with Apple's API to like replace the default service. Like, just like you can do with Alexa in the app, you say, I want my default music service to be Apple Music because I don't want Amazon Music or Spotify. I want Apple Music. You know, I hope that Apple builds the equivalent of that.
Could definitely do a Siri Kit domain of that essence where even if it's not default, but it's like, you know how you can do WhatsApp chats through Siri today? You say WhatsApp, blah, 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 message, and you get roughly the same thing. They could definitely do that, but they obviously haven't shown any interest in doing that yet. The wriggle on the Fire TV thing is that if you have the cube, you can output to multi-room, and if you just have the stick, you can't.
Okay.
But that's the difference. Otherwise, it's the same thing. And it doesn't seem like you can play music videos. It's only music. So,
and this is just taking advantage of what's already there, that there's a way for Apple to build this with what Amazon provides so that they're using that. It isn't that they've got a special arrangement to now be, you know, special service that works on these platforms, right?
Like, it's literally the exact same API integration that works on the speaker. It's basically treating the TV stick like an Echo speaker.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then doing the same thing. Like, that's why there's not a dedicated app or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just you can tell it to play music and it'll play it.
Yeah.
And the lack of music video support is an obvious hint towards that because they don't have music videos on the API for the voice, so they don't have it on the TV, even though obviously a TV would be a perfect place for music videos.
Or some of the Echoes with screens could if they supported it in the future.
It's cool. I think it just shows that, you know, Apple continues to partner with third parties on different things, and even if there wasn't code changes, there would definitely have been some sort of, you know, legal agreement, like a negotiation of, yes, you can also put it on these platforms as well.
Yeah, someone had to make it. that's from Apple.
And it probably does mean that, maybe not next month, but down the road, there will also be some sort of integration with Apple's TV service into the Amazon ecosystem.
It shows that if there's a way for Apple to make something without a special arrangement, that they've got an interest in doing that for the sake of putting their service on more platforms. And you can't go to Amazon's Voice Assistant and say, sign me up for Apple Music and pay through Amazon. You've got to have it elsewhere. So you've got to have it on your Android phone or iPhone or Windows or Mac. So there's no revenue split to be discussed there. It's just that you can use it there if you've got it somewhere else.
So you telling me that the only way you can do it is if you log in from already having an account? Isn't Isn't that unfair?
It's not fair. I mean, that is literally the same thing. Like,
yeah, it literally is.
Yeah. So, except you don't have the browser to go and sign up if you wanted to. Yeah. So that's interesting. And I saw people actually, like, I made a joke of, you know, finally, but because, you know, didn't know if there was really demand for this, but there were some people I saw who have Fire TVs and use Apple Music and have wanted this. So it's
yeah, I use Apple Music on the Apple TV fairly regularly. Like,
oh yeah, me too.
We don't have HomePods in the living room stuff at the moment, so I just put music on through my family just put music on through the TV and just have it on in the background, and it, you know, works fine. And the music videos are pretty cool because they do music video playlists now on the Apple TV app, so that's pretty cool as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't think it sounds stupid, like, oh, music on the TV, but plenty of people do it.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yep, and there's also news about Apple Music designing unique artwork for playlists, so tell me about that.
Yeah, this is just a cool little ditty where all of the, like, algorithmic Apple Music playlists, like pop essentials, jazz essentials, all of these different, like, categories and genres that would previously have kind of like formulaic album artwork where it'd basically be the same thing but with a different color. It was clearly made like en masse. Now they're hiring designers and artists to make album artwork custom for each one.
They take money from Spotify and they pay designers to make artwork for their playlists. What happens?
See, you're getting more of a like a vinyl experience where it's like not so, oh, this is clearly made by a machine. There was someone who actually spent time to make a cool album artwork here, and it looks cool. And they show a few examples in the post, and they say they're going to be doing thousands over the coming months, which is a small part of the experience, but I think it's welcomed. It's nice to have, like, truly unique artwork and not, oh, this is just the same thing, like a cookie cutter repeated 20 times over with a different word at the bottom of the square.
Yeah, yeah. And they've always had really cool artwork. Sometimes they lean too heavily on emoji. but they've always like really cool artwork for album art for playlists. So this is taking people who would be the artist for this genre, you know, a musician artwork from that genre, and doing it for the whole playlist for the genre. So it's neat. And tell me about the Eve Flare. It's a HomeKit light. So you've reviewed the Eve Flare. What's the story here?
Yeah, so this is a mood light, evening light, bedside light kind of. It's sort of like the same thing as a Philips Hugo, except it's bigger and less bright. So it's less of like a focus light and more just kind of like ambience in the room, and it's multicolored, and it's like a globe. So it's a bit like a big sphere with the bottom shaved off so it doesn't roll around, it lays flat. And you can control it with HomeKit, you can tell it to go different colours. It's really cool. It's like one of those nice, you know, nice to haves, and kind of set, you can put it in the middle of like a dining room table when you're having a party and stuff, and it can be there because it can be plugged in on like a wireless base, or it has internal battery, so you can even hang it up on like a lantern if you really want to. And they claim 6 hours of battery life. I don't know why they claim 6 hours, because I've been using it for like weeks now and it easily gets like 12. So you can last the whole day with it showing colors, like on full brightness, it will last like 12 hours. And you can tell Siri to change the color, you can change it to the brightness, you can, you know, do everything you normally do with like a Philips Hue light or anything else in HomeKit. Mm-hmm. But it's just this cool kind of feature light that you can, you know, throw in the house and then you just drop it back on the charging pad when you're done.
And this was out in Europe for a while and now it's in the US, is that right?
Yeah, it was out last year in parts of Europe and now it's finally in the United States. I think it's $100, and the Hue goes like the same price, but for the Hue system, it's a smaller light that's kind of more directional. It's not like a globe. The Hue goes, you kind of like put it in the corner and like shine it outwards, like a bookcase type situation. Mm-hmm. Whereas this can more be like a, you know, like a feature, like you can put it on your table and just have fun with it and then put it away.
For
when
the
you're
Hue
done.
Go, you need to have the Hue HomeKit bridge.
Yes,
to make it work with Wi-Fi and to make it work with HomeKit. So do you need a bridge for the Eve?
There is no bridge required. It's bridgeless. It so uses it's Bluetooth,
bucks
so
flat
it's
to get started.
It's Bluetooth, so it's not quite as, you know, instant as you might want it to be sometimes, but it's fine. It works.
Yeah, and with Bluetooth HomeKit stuff, the range with no HomeKit hub, quote unquote, is Bluetooth range. But if you have a HomeKit hub, which is an always present and powered on iPad or I think an Apple TV or a HomePod, then I think you get kind of the same benefits as a Wi-Fi accessory in terms of range and remote access.
Yeah, and you can do it remote access because it just funnels it through. It like relays it through the,
right,
the hub.
Yeah,
yeah. So because obviously the HomePods have Bluetooth in them, so that's what they communicate over, and they just send the command through.
So you're not limited to 60 feet of control. You still have home and remote access if you've got one of those three products. So that's cool.
And one kind of cool related thing that I found when testing this is, I didn't know this. You can ask the Siri to tell you what color a light is. So if you in the home app, you can bring up like a color wheel and set any color on that wheel to be the color, but they don't have like obvious names, especially when you're on the temperature color wheel where it's like warm and cool shades of white and blue.
Right.
What I found is you can actually ask the HomePod or a Siri or anything on any device, what is the color of the light or what is the color of the room, and it will come up with a name for that color, and then you can say that color back to it in future to set it to exactly that same shade. And it's really like a fun game to like set it to a random color and ask it what it will do. So like if you pick like an orange color, it won't say orange. It will be like tiger eye. Or you can pick like a really faint blue and it's like languid lavender. And it's like all these like official formal color names for this entire spectrum. But I just never realized you could ask that before. And
yeah, I did not know that. I did know about the challenge of you've got like six preset warm to cool shades of white, basically. And the ones that you would use with like names of like basic blue, white, yellow, orange aren't the ones that you'd actually like color temperature you'd want to have for a lamp. So you've just done it backwards. You've set the color first and then ask what it's called. And it turns out Siri has a name for it that you can repeat back to it. And cause I'd never, found a way beyond setting a scene to restore like the same color temperature of a light. But you've cracked it. You've got to ask the color name and then memorize that.
Yeah. And so, some of the names are very like Byzantine and you'd never guess them, but right. It's kind of fun just to like set around color and see what it says.
Yeah. You might not even be able to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's neat. I wonder if there's any word that's exposed. That's like every single variable of like what a color can be, you know, set like in text.
Yeah. I bet there's a database somewhere that someone's ripped out of the code, because there have to be like localized names somewhere in iOS probably.
Yeah.
One thing I just want to say about the Flare, the one downside I kind of have with it is that it only goes to set distinct colors. You can't really set up like, oh, I want it to go through all the different shades of purple and like oscillate between them constantly.
Yeah,
you
can do the EVAP, right?
Yeah, even through the EVAP, it just lets you set yellow, blue, red, white.
Because EVAP is like, you know, there's the paid HomeKit app that's excellent. You can do things with automation that you can't do in the home app from Apple because Apple doesn't support every automation API that they actually create. Sometimes they want you to go and find another app to do it. So there's the third party home app that came first that is like, I think maybe $13 or so, which is like expensive for people in the app world these days. But if it's what you need, it's a really good app. They've got a lot of good stuff there, but Eve's app has been one that people recommend as a free alternative, even if you have a HomeKit stuff that isn't from Eve, because it's just so basic. Here's the API for HomeKit. Here's everything we can make with it, and then nothing else. Whereas like Nanoleaf that makes the light panels that color shift, they do a bunch of custom stuff in their app, like letting you design color scenes and play with the way that like colors and light work, that you can't do in the home app, but then you can call those scenes that get, I guess, donated to the home app, and then you can activate them with Siri or through a button in the home app. So
yeah, you like set them up in the Nanoleaf app and then they get exposed to HomeKit, so you can actually reactivate them anytime.
Right. Which is pretty neat that you can even do that, but there is an opportunity either for Eve to do more work with that, like Nanoleaf has done, or for Apple to do the first ever improvement to the home app. Like, it's never been changed really beyond like now you can
wallpapers.
Yeah. Now there's different wallpapers and you can support, you know,
The only thing they've done for it is add additional supported accessories.
Accessories. And I think like at first there wasn't the automation for like sunset and sunrise and they added stuff like that. So, but it hasn't changed in a year at least. Like last year there was no change. So Apple could do some of that stuff too. Because they already know if a light is just brightness up and down or if it's color temperatures of white or if it's color temperatures of an actual color changes. They just haven't done anything with can the color move. And with Hue, they also, they do some stuff in their app, but there's a big ecosystem of apps that work with Hue that can make your lights, you know, change colors and rhythm. And they don't donate anything to HomeKit either. So it's like you've got to use an app to control it, which is just, if you're used to using voice control, you know, it's a step backwards. So that's a good discovery. I want to mention one thing this week happened over the weekend. My daughter was having her sixth birthday party. It was her first skating rink kind of party. And I put on the skates, and I'm not a skater at all. And I never, like, I remember being 7 at a skating party myself and like using the handrails to scoot around while all the other kids were like skating in motion and everything. Lives with me today. But at her party, I thought, I'm going to skate with you. And I was very awkward and like, you know, what, left, right? And like, I was walking basically on wheels. But my son, he's 18 months, was wearing shoes, and he kind of came out with a family member and saw me skating and stepped in front of me. And so to stop from like just running into him entirely on wheels, I fell backwards and I still knocked us both down, and he was crying. And then I was a little sore, but like, he was okay. He stood up, got a hug. He was just had his, you know, feelings hurt. But I noticed when I checked after I fell, my Apple Watch detected the fall for the first time. It was the first time I'd fallen, since having the Apple Watch Series 4. And fall detection's turned off if you're under 65, because Apple assumes that you're going to be more active than if you're 65 or older and you accidentally fall. Even though, like, in their introduction video, like, to, you know, pitch for fall detection, they described it as like a common thing among, everyone, and they showed like someone on a ladder having an accident. I think skating is like what they're avoiding the alerts for. Like if you skate regularly, you probably might have an accident and fall, but you're not really hurt. But it worked. Like, it, I felt it vibrate, and it was like the countdown was there for calling 911 and notifying my emergency contact, and I could quickly say I'm okay and tap it, and it wasn't an issue. But a couple of takeaways here. The first one is that I think they could probably turn it on by default for everybody. Mm-hmm. And just if you want to turn it off, you can. And it should be that you can turn it off from the watch, like in the settings app, not just from the watch app on the iPhone. But that also, like, if you're like me and you've gone 6 months with being active but not having a false positive, just have it on and just tap I'm okay if you're fine. And like that'd be a fine default. I think I had two things, but I lost the other one. So I think the fall is catching up with me. But anyway, it worked out. It was great. And fall detection, I wrote in my review that I wasn't able to test it like with a fake fall or anything. I couldn't like trick it. In this case, it worked just fine. And, it's a cool feature. I like it. So
yeah, I reckon that fall detection will become on by default soon. Like, I think they launched it conservatively because they didn't want to freak people out, especially if they're weird edge cases. But for me, you know, I'm not the most active person in the world, but you know, I'm still young and like diving around, and it's never done like a false positive to me where it's been like I've been falling and I haven't been. So
yeah,
and I think that's generally repeated by other people that have turned it on manually. So I reckon it's their plan to make it, you know, on by default, because things like skating, things like skating are, you know, they're the niche, they're not the mainstream, right? Like,
right, yeah. It's like, and I wrote in my review that I often do go out running, often, you know, street running, like, just that there's not a sidewalk, so I run on the road, and like in a neighborhood where there are drivers sometimes at night, and so I'll wear lighting. But I usually go with just my phone or just my watch because it's got LTE. I can call someone if I need to. But in that case, like, if I were to be hit by a driver who decided they didn't want to stop, and you know, and the watch could detect, oh, you've taken a stumble, then it would be great if I was unconscious to have the watch then call 911 and message my emergency contact. Like, that's not a scenario I'd ever want to be in, but it's definitely possible. And so, you know, anyone can turn on fall detection. It isn't like with the ECG where it's region restricted. You know, so it's not that big of a deal that it's not on by default if you're under 65. But I think on by default would be totally okay. Just because after 6 months of use, like it never went off mistakenly, and it did go off when it was supposed to. I heard from one person, he said that they sneezed once and it was such a hard sneeze that they jumped and it triggered fall detection. But, you know, again, edge case, not the typical, you know, behavior that you see. All right, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. Thanks again to Mark Gurman for joining us from Bloomberg. That was nice to hear from our old colleague on the show.
Yep.
And if you enjoy Happy Hour, we'd love to hear from you. You can follow us on Twitter at Paul is Zach, and Benjamin, you're at
BZA Mayo.
But also leave us a review in iTunes or a star rating, and that will help feed our egos and help others discover the show. Or if you listen in Overcast or another app, often you can recommend the show with a star to suggest it, and that's great. Or just share it on social media, share it with a friend. If you know someone who would like to listen to a podcast like Happy Hour, we certainly appreciate that. And check out Stack Trace on 9to5Mac. That's another podcast that recently launched from Guy Rambo and developer John Sandel. There's not much overlap. They're more in the weeds about iOS development and the behind-the-scenes code changes. So if you're interested in something a little different speed, check out Stack Trace. And with that being said, we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.